Hello and welcome to the first episode of the official Isuzu Ute A-League Men podcast for 2023-24. David Wiener with you. Absolutely pumped that we are in the week of season kickoff for the A-League Men once again, and there is so much to look forward to. Pumped for two reasons. The season's starting, and I've got two gentlemen next to me. The band is back together for this special edition of the podcast. David Davidovic, Tom Smithies, great to see you, gentlemen. Where have you been the last few months? How's your off-season been, and what are you looking forward to this season?
Well, the small matter of the Women's World Cup took up something of the off-season. Seems as like a moment ago we were in Qatar recording these two World Cups in a year. It'll do that to you. But there's as we're just discussing, some terrific recruitment, some really interesting young players coming through. And I can't believe the season's come around already, but I'm pretty glad it has.
Speaking of recruitment, the two of us in T-shirts, and we have a man resplendent in a collared shirt and jacket next to us, just to bring the level up a little bit.
Well, it was quite a formal occasion we were attending today, but in speaking of the last few months to the Qatar World Cup, does seem like a long, long time ago, but the FIFA Women's World Cup, it was an extraordinary 5 weeks. We're all still kind of recovering from it, but the afterglow of that into the A-League women's season and clearly into the A-League men's season is substantial.
We've got lots to get stuck into, and of course, speaking of the Women's World Cup, Dub Zone, the first episode has gone live on Channel 10, Template, on the A-League's channels and on YouTube as well. Make sure you have a listen to that or watch of that. Great stuff there with Niamh Owens and Taya Pellizzari driving the show again this season. And you'll find lots of content, gents, from us and from our team on aleagues.com.au. So you've got the home of the A-Leagues with wall-to-wall coverage of the competition, stats, fixtures, results, ladders. That's all there. And of course, Keep Up, which you would have read what we've worked during the World Cup. Both World Cups is your home and destination for Australian football, all things Australian football. But taking out my trusty guide from aleagues.com.au, which starts with Adelaide United, we're going to run this day today, gents, talking about why your club that is your listening can win the A-League Championship this season. And there's no better place to start there with other than Adelaide United with A, Dave. Now, the question with Adelaide, of course, we know fabulous bunch of kids, great kids coming through, have had a great last couple of seasons, but they're looking to take the next step without, of course, Greg Goodwin, can they?
Well, there's no better time to start and talk about the positivity and the potential of winning the league than round one, because everyone's, you know, on an even keel and a clean slate. But Adelaide United have not had the off-season they would have liked. Clearly, the elephant in the room is the Craig Goodwin situation, the club legend, Johnny Warren, medal winner. They clearly didn't want to lose him, but there was a massive offer that came in from Saudi Arabia, and in the end, Craig Goodwin has departed. We hope that he'll come back to the A-League at some stage, and obviously for him and his family, I think we, you know, would hope to see him back at Adelaide United at some stage, but massive shoes to fill. He was on fire last season, and off the back of his form at the World Cup, I think he came back. He was a different player. There was a different air of confidence and you know, arrogance almost about him. So that will be a massive loss. But you mentioned the young players. There's a cohort of youngsters who at Adelaide are pushing for an opportunity, and I think that will open up opportunities for some of the younger players, and someone like Bernardo, who we didn't see a lot of last season, largely due to injury, but I think that does open the door for someone like him.
Yeah, very much looking at Bernardo as almost like a new signing. And the other interesting thing is the off-season, I think, for Adelaide has been taken up with a lot of things off the field. New owners changing a lot of things about the club. Some interesting things they've done as well is like three of the youth players who were on scholarship players but played a lot last year, Johnny Yule amongst them, have been moved on to full-time contracts, which A, rewards them for their efforts so far, but also means that, you know, if a foreign club comes in, then Adelaide will get a fee. Those three players are then replaced by three more from the youth team that won the South Australia MPL Grand Final on scholarship contracts. So the conveyor belt continues, and they are rewarding those players with first-team places. I guess if I was an Adelaide United fan, I'd say is there too much reliance on kids? Despite what Alex Ferguson said many years ago, it is possible to have too many in the team. But that's Carl Veer's job, to try and mould them into a decent side.
And we know who the star, at least from a fan's point of view, will be to start the season, Nestori Iraconda. Whether this is his last season in the A-League men is yet to be seen. That move, as we speak, hasn't materialised, but we suspect that will at some point in this season, in which case a big season for him to continue to step up. And without Craig Goodwin there, he is arguably the star attraction at Adelaide.
He is. There's been a lot of interest in this story around Kunda. There's been reports, dating back a few months with Bayern Munich coming in for him. And, you know, we believe there's a range of other top-line European clubs who've come. The good news for Adelaide is he will be staying. He can't leave till he's 18 anyway. So I think this will be a huge season for him and the club. And, you know, perhaps we'll see him start more games and have, you know, more of an impact, a longer impact. But another one that I'm really looking forward to seeing is Ethan Elegich. I really liked what I saw last season and, you know, quite apt at, you know, another father-son, if you like, in an anniversary year for Adelaide United. I think we'll be ready to step up. But you talk about kids and, you know, how much success can you have with kids? I think the underlying issue here is they've got a quality production line. So I think some of these kids are just longing for an opportunity, and once they get it, they'll take it.
So in conclusion on Adelaide, very close the last couple of seasons. Is it a step too far with that Craig Goodwin, or can some of the parts over the course of the season be pulled together by Carl Witt to make an even later run they have last couple of years?
I think the magic word is momentum. First few weeks become crucial. If those kids are in the team, they're winning games, there's a confidence there, they can just stumble forwards into a run of good form. If they start with difficult results, then that's when you need senior players to say, it's okay, we've been here before, we can turn this round. That's in 2015-16, it was the senior players who dragged them off the bottom of the table and they ultimately won the league. So I think it all depends on how well they start. But nobody likes going to Cooper Stadium on a Friday night with a full house.
And still a decent cohort of senior players, two through the spine, led by, and you can even put Joe Gauci possibly into that group as well as Socceroo now. But some of those players still from that squad are still there as well. So there is a balance. It's just missing that all-star talisman.
Yeah, I think this is the year we see Joe Gauci step up, go to another level and potentially become the dominant keeper in the A-League. And that, you know, that would be huge for them. But I agree. I think they'll be playing finals football this year. I think there's a lot to like about Adelaide United. And despite all the challenges of the off-season, I think the fans will rally behind them.
Brisbane Roar. We talk about where Adelaide have finished last year and that you can discuss this season in light of that. Brisbane Roar, you almost cannot. We've seen a completely new look side through the Australia Cup. Close in the Australia Cup, but obviously Sydney FC got the run of them in the end to take the trophy. But Tom, you were covering the game at the venue, and I know you in particular, you wrote about it. You really liked what they saw, as did a lot of other people looking on.
Not just that game, the way they beat Western Sydney as well. I was surprised at how they swept Western Sydney away. And actually talking to a couple of the Western Sydney players, and after that game, I said, what went wrong? And they said, well, to be fair, Brisbane were very good. You've got to give that to them. And I think there's a really interesting brand of football that's so redolent of the year that Ross Aloisi spent in Japan, learning from Muscat, who learned from Postecoglou, that Yokohama way, which seems to be cascading through Australian football. Really good to watch. And Jay Hoshea, for instance, like a brilliant player on Saturday night, but he is loving the way they're playing. He's loving his role there. He's loving playing with Lauren Berger. They brought him from Melbourne City. Really enjoying the fact that it's playing through the lines. It's his kind of football. The question, of course, is squad depth. You know, they don't have a striker beyond Thomas Waddington, who's 18 years old, scored in the Australian Cup final, but has gone away with the Young Socceroos, will probably miss round one if he gets injured, or at some point he'll be tired, he'll need a rest. They almost don't have an alternative, and they've kind of joking about that. So squad depth is the worry for me, but I think they'll play some great football along the way.
Yeah, I think they'll be very good to watch, and I can't wait to watch Berenguer and O'Shea together as well.
Yeah, some very, very good players. I think the key for them is, you know, some of those sort of mid-tier players and some of those experienced heads like the, you know, the Scott Nevilles and Jack Hingetts. I think if they can just be solid, steady, just provide that backbone, you've got obviously the quality of O'Shea and Berenguer, and then some of those young players can step up in fits and spurts. Oh, I think they could be really dangerous. But again, loving seeing, you know, the youngsters come through, Waddingham, you know, scoring a few goals in the Australia Cup. Again, opportunities. I think it's going to be the year or the season of the young Australian player, and I think Brisbane Roar will play a huge part in that.
I think the coaches that back those players in will get rewarded, and Ross Aloisi will certainly be one of them. But Tom, you've done a feature on A-League.com.au in recent weeks on the new leadership at Brisbane Roar, and I think if clubs and coaches stem from the top, there's just a different look and feel about Brisbane Roar this year. That very much does stem from the top.
Yeah, there's very much a sense of apologising for, I find the right phrase here, not past wrongs, but maybe the club has become disconnected from the Brisbane community, the Queensland football community. They talked, Zach Anderson and Casper Dafter, the new COO and CEO respectively, who are both former A-League players. They've talked about the club becoming disconnected from the community around it. And that's the first thing they've gone back into the community and said, we want you to support us, we want you to back us, and just we want to embrace you and you to embrace us, and created a culture of can-do at the club. So even talking to Ross Aloisi after the game on Saturday night, he likes the fact that they're ex-players, that they understand player mentality, but they're also there to make hard business decisions. And he knows what the budget is. He's very open about that. That's one of the reasons he's going to play the kids, is because they've said, we need to right the ship financially, and then we will be able to progress moving forward next year, the year after.
And I think Ross is an outstanding appointment. I mean, he was brought in by the previous regime, but clearly been backed in by the new regime. But he's ready to go. I mean, that year or so under Kevin Muscat at Yokohama F. Marinos, who, you know, are obviously flying, it's clearly had an impact on him. And the fact that he's been at Brisbane Roar previously as an assistant coach, he's obviously got that that intimate local knowledge. So I think he's a perfect appointment. And I mean, you only have to look as far as Spurs, speaking of Yokohama F. Marinos, to see, you know, what an impact a coach can have.
Absolutely. Well, can't get too carried away with an Australian Cup run. This is a long way to go. But based on that, and based on the recruitment, based on the coaching pedigree, based on a good feel, I think we might see them back in finals contention at least this season. But the depth is going to be, the sustaining over the long run is going to be the challenge. Now, moving on to Central Coast Mariners, the defending champions. Let me just read this out to you, gents, and this is really critical in determining whether the Mariners can go, of course, back-to-back out. And we'll start it with Nick Montgomery, Patriantis, Pavlicic, Beach, Cummings, Yaron Souza, Sammy Silvera, Benny Nkololo, James McGarry and Moresh. It's a fairly considerable list of outs from a side that, it's fair to say, captured the imagination last term to win the A-League Championship. But can that be rebuilt quickly enough to defend it?
The biggest issue, the biggest unknowable, is how Mark Jackson will fare in the A-Leagues. The club's newly appointed football manager, we have to call him, until his qualifications are brought up to the level that's deemed acceptable. He has a track record of working with young players, working in the academy at Leeds United. That's one of the main reasons he's been appointed. The issue is that his one spell as a head coach at MK Dons did not end well and didn't last very long either. So that is the biggest unknowable, because every time a player left at the Mariners, Monty gave off this air of, so what, we've got another one coming through. We aim for these players to leave so we can give the players coming through a chance. And so there is the pipeline of talent there. They signed Angel to replace Moresh and Benny Nkolo. They've still got Marco Tullio, of course, and Garang Kowal comes back after 2 years.
Or Alu.
Alu Kowal comes back. I thought I was breaking a story there.
What a story.
I'd love to see them both playing together, but nevertheless, fantasy land.
But yes, after 2 years in Germany, Alu Kowal, it'd be very interesting to see how he's developed, how his game awareness has developed, his movement, his finishing, of course. And if he goes well, then they can go well. But I just think the fascination is the unknowables.
They've probably got enough, Dave, to still contend for the finals. Where do you see them landing?
Yeah, they do, clearly. If they won the title last year, yes, a great list of outs, but they should have, you know, enough depth there to, you know, it's a challenge, and players like Christian Fiaharis are clearly good enough to step up and play, you know, a bigger role. Someone like Jacob Farrell, when you speak of youngsters, you know, I really liked what he was about, you know, particularly the season before last. Probably didn't get as many opportunities last season, but I think he's got massive upside. But to echo Tom's sentiments, I don't often agree with Tom, but I...
Please don't. As we know from anyone that listens to this show.
The biggest out for me is Nick Montgomery. Yes, you can have a coach who's got all the experience, to your point, with, you know, youngsters. And Warren Joyce was probably a good example a few years ago at Melbourne City. You know, he came from the famed Manchester United Youth Academy. But the uniqueness of Nick Montgomery was his knowledge and understanding of that local Central Coast region and the local academy. And I think it's a really unique place in Australia, let alone in the A-League. And I think the way he was able to understand that and understand the, you know, the local market and the fans, and, you know, almost give off those Laurie McKenna type vibes where, you know, you really let the fans in at the, and there's that sense of community. I think that was a really big part of their success last season. So let's see if the new fella can echo that.
Lot to still be celebrating in the Central Coast, Tom. Of course, a Liberty A-League side as well to go with that. Their first game the weekend just played. They are the defending champions, so I think there's still a lot for the community to get around. Do you see it ending in a finals run and a championship, you know, in championship contention?
I think there's enough quality there. Again, as we said with Adelaide, if they get some early good results, then I think that there should be enough quality for them to get into the top six. Emulating last year, that could be a stretch. I'm just intrigued to see how the Central Coast community reacts to being called unique by Dave Davutovic.
Finishing up on the Central Coast as well, it's hard to say what to make of the AFC Cup, but certainly if that is anything to judge by, goals are still in great supply this season too. So they've got off to a good start there. Good to see the goals are still flowing, because arguably with the outs that they have suffered, that would be the one question maybe fans are a little bit anxious about, despite the players that have come in. MacArthur, gentlemen. Tom, I'll start with you on MacArthur, because you have interviewed recently Mile Sejovski about the AFC Cup with their run, which we've been covering, of course, on Keep Up, where you can see all the highlights from the AFC Cup and the AFC Champions League, not just with the Australian teams, but across the whole continent, including the Galaxy of Stars that, of course, in Saudi Arabia. What was your impression of talking to Mile then, and your sense of what the club is building towards?
Well, you mentioned Australia Cup form. I mean, you know, that's no guide to how a team's going to go, because MacArthur won it a year ago and then basically fell apart after Dwight left. And I didn't envy Mile trying to pick up that team at that point. He seems remarkably confident. He is one of the quieter individuals in the game. And it's interesting, he fired up a little bit when asked whether he fires up. Although he mentioned his assistants, I think, do that for him. But on paper, they have some very, very good players. Daniel De Silva remains a terrific player. They've got quality across the park. Philip Curto, I think they've got one of the best goalkeepers in the league. They should be top six without a shadow of a doubt. The quality is there. If they could garner a little bit more local support, make it a little bit more of a hostile place to go, that might help them.
When you talk about quality, that includes Valerie Germain, obviously from Montpellier, but with a fantastic CV. Great feature on him on Aligues.com.au if you want to learn a little bit more about him. So in that sense, there's not just quality, but some real pedigree in there too, Dave. Is it enough for them to kick on to the levels that Tom's suggested that they should be on paper?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they are coming from a long way back, so they need everything going for them. Germain is an outstanding signing. I mean, De Villa's still there as well. We'll see how much football he plays this season, but you know, De Silva is you know, in some ways he could be their barometer this season, because he's got enormous potential, and there's been signs at times where, you know, he's been knocking on the door of Socceroos' selection, and, you know, the skill isn't, you know, the question for him. It's that fitness and the ability to be able to, you know, do those repeat runs and that consistency over 90 minutes. So if he can, you know, really perform and show that consistency, and then some of those younger players such as a Jake Holman step up, I think they could, you know, they could potentially threaten the top six, but they do need a lot going for them.
And some reasonable recruitment. Clayton Lewis obviously coming from across the ditch. Terrific set piece taker they've got with him there as well. So yeah, on paper there's some really interesting signs there for MacArthur. Let's see how they also balance that run with Asia as well, because that does take a toll. They've had some big trips that they've got to contend with as well. So
it looks like they're going through the group stage, let's be honest.
Yeah, so that is a fair bit to balance, and it's unlike, I think, you know, I think in your article you referenced Mile Sejovski's European experience, but certainly travel through the AFC is something that is enough to change any complexion of any seeds team's domestic campaign. We're going to Melbourne City. Just a really interesting one. I'm fascinated by Melbourne City this season, because obviously they've won one of the three championship finals they've been in over the last couple of years. Changing of the guard, Scott Jamieson out, the Jamie McLaren era as well. But they've got some replacing of players to do, and it's a new era there. Is the best of their premiership or championship window over, Dave, or are they still the favourites as we speak right now?
On paper, they're still very, very solid. You've got that Socceroos backbone. Lecky obviously, you know, had the injury in Socceroos camp, but he'll be back pretty soon. Andrew Naboot is a huge blow and will miss the chunk of the season, potentially even the whole season. But when you've got McLara there, who stepped up as captain rather, and, you know, just spoken about, you know, they've had a kid and how that's sort of changed his perspective on things. Oh, I still think, you know, Aziz Baich obviously signing, he's a huge signing for them. They've got a fantastic core, but the big one for them is the coaching situation. They went into last season with Patrick Gisnorbo coaching them. He'd obviously been there for a long, long time, and, you know, a few years as the head coach, and they were rocking and rolling. And when Rado Vidicic took over, obviously there was just that continuation. But, you know, the way they lost in the grand final was really concerning last season. So I'll be really interested to see how they bounce back. It's a, you know, very much a new look coaching staff. You've got Alessandro Diamanti coming in from the local rivals Western United, which adds another element of intrigue. And you've got Scotty Jamieson on the bench as well. So could be quite a volatile
I don't envy the fourth official.
Not at all. But look, you've always got a really good group of young players coming through. We know, the famed City Academy. They obviously had the huge sales of Marco Tilio and Jordan Boss last season. So there's that conveyor belt of youngsters coming through. So look, clearly they'll be there or thereabouts. For me, they play finals football. It's a case of how far they go. So I'm not 100% convinced at this stage.
And that, you talk about the record sales, which is a great news story. It's part of what is part of the sort of on the sales pitch about the A-Leagues at the moment, the amount of revenue we can make for Australian footballers, so for Australian clubs selling Australian footballers and the conveyor belt we've got to Europe. However, that does mean Boss, Tilio, Inna Muggs, Jamieson retiring, Tom Glover, Aidan O'Neill. There is a fair bit for the coaching staff to reconcile here at Melbourne City. There's plenty of ins. But just been knocked out of the Australia Cup as well earlier than they would have liked. I think there are some questions.
There are. And for me, the big question is the service to McLaren. That you take away Naboo, you take away Berenger, you take away Tilio. Now, they brought in Tolgay Arslan, and so far, so very good.
Very good. Yeah.
Terrific pedigree showing through in their Australia Cup run. But I'm really concerned about the goal, how they will score as many goals as they have in the past, simply because the supply lines, I don't think, not the established supply lines, won't be there. And that is the big issue for me. That's why I think they're back in the pack. I'm not saying they can't win the league or they won't win the league, but I think they're not out in front anymore.
So they've had a mortgage on the premiership. Are we saying this year might be a little bit more hotly contested?
I don't think they're favourites. I think they're one of the favourites.
Interesting. Well, crosstown rivals Melbourne Victory. Are they one of the ones, Dave, to knock back on the door? I mean, obviously, an extremely disappointing season last season, but it is not beyond Tony Popovich to lift them from there right up into contention again. Do you get a sense from, you beat there in Melbourne that might be the case this season?
Once bitten, twice shy. I pumped Melbourne Victory up leading into last season, and I was proven to be very, very wrong. Look, last season was difficult for Melbourne Victory, to be serious. It was, there were things that happened off the field, some things that were out of their control, which no doubt affected the team. Speaking to Lee Broxham a few days ago, he said every player, dealt with various situations differently. But clearly, speaking to people at Melbourne Victory this season, there's been a fair bit of turnover, not as much as there has been in, their previous kind of, let's say, overhauls, but enough to just regenerate and add some fresh blood through there. The one that I'm most looking forward to seeing is Daniel Arzani. He's not young anymore. He's on the youthful side. He comes back to a place where he played his best football, to a stadium where he played his best football alongside a teammate who he played his best football alongside in Bruno Fornaroli. A lot of those goals and assists and combinations happened with Bruno back in that 2017-18 season. And the reports from Melbourne Victory are that he's absolutely flying in pre-season. And Popper's ridden him pretty hard, shock horror. But that's kind of what Daniel Arzani needs. But he's absolutely relishing it. So if we can get, 80 or 90% of the talent that we saw at the World Cup in 2018 when we were both there, Tom, he could potentially absolutely turn Melbourne Victory's season on its head.
My concern is that this is the sixth club that at which he's not been able to rediscover that form. He did a succession of moves in Europe. And we have to put in the caveat, he did a very serious knee injury, was out for a year. Until that point, his progress had been seamless, and he'd come through without any real setbacks. And at Sydney FC, when he was there in the youth system, they talked about a kid with brilliant skill, but, was quite cheeky in many ways. And I think when he went to Celtic, he got that injury. He's not yet shown that he's been able to come back fully and reach the same heights. If anyone can do it, it'll be Tony Popovich. But I'm concerned that it's been that many times that we've had false dawns that whilst I would love to see it, I'm going to be surprised if I see it.
Well, there's a probably different build-up. I think last year we were talking about his return to the A-Leagues as a late run for the World Cup. And then obviously that didn't come to fruition. But Dave, there was a great clip, and it's sometimes it's about being the right place at the right time. Now, maybe at Celtic it was the wrong place at the wrong time. And looking at the bromance between Bruno Fornaroli and Daniel Arzani, the discipline that Tony Popovich will instill in him, you were there when the team shot that fun content with Bruno and Daniel, but they look happy. They look like there's a chemistry there, and we know historically there has been one, and that can sometimes dictate how a player's going to end up faring in an environment.
Yeah, and I've bumped into Daniel a few times outside of that, and he does seem happy. He's really relishing it. He speaks openly about loving the discipline that, you know, Tony Popovich, you know, shows, and you know, how, I guess, tightly he, you know, he rides him, how tight a leash it is. So, you know, I think Tom absolutely makes a good point, but sometimes when you're in Europe and you get a bad injury and you make one bad move, then it's just this vicious circle that's really difficult to get out of. What's evident is this is the fittest Daniel Arzani's been potentially ever, but most certainly since that 2018 period when, you know, he made that late run for the World Cup squad. I mean, I remember he only started his first game for Melbourne Victory, I think it was in January. And, you know, 5 months later, he's in the World Cup squad. 5 months later, he's coming on in World Cup games. And he was, you know, he was, there was fear in the opposition when he was coming off the bench. And he just had this swagger and confidence about him. And I was seeing that same Daniel Arzani.
What's interesting is around that time, watching him training with the Socceroos at the World Cup is how hard they rode him.
Yeah.
The players absolutely crucified him for the slightest mistake. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's what he needs, because I can't imagine Dwight York at MacArthur. I don't think was necessarily the right coach in there, because Dwight just assumed that people would do certain things. Maybe he needs that explicit, you will do this, you will do that, I'm going to measure you every single day. That is Mark of the Popper regime.
I remember they were kicking lumps out as him in training, and he would just get up and dust himself off and continue being pretty chirpy. So, you know, when you're talking about Mili, Jedinak, Mark Milligan, some big names and some big bodies, you know, with overseas, experience. So, yeah, he's not too fussed. So I'm intrigued to see, you know, what he delivers. And I think the Victory system is really set up for him nicely from a tactical viewpoint also.
And the fact we've spoken about him for a few minutes, yeah, despite what you said, Tom's sixth club, shows the interest and intrigue there is still in Australian football in him. Before we conclude on Melbourne Victory, I'm looking at their recruitment. I'm going, everyone that's out, I would imagine Tony Popovich, that was part of a plan. I'm looking at that going, there's not a loss there that wasn't calculated. Right, a couple of really interesting years, Adama Traore, but I'll pick your brain on Ryan Teague, a talented Australian player who's done some time in Europe, in Portugal, led junior national teams. He's back now. And again, talking about giving youth a chance, it'd be terrific to see him flourish. And then you're looking at a team here that might be back where the league and the audience expects them to be.
It's interesting comparison to draw with Arzani, not to criticise Arzani so much, but Ryan Teague is so highly respected at Sydney FC, so highly respected in the young Socceroos as a captain, as a leader. That's one of the things that took him to Portugal, why clubs wanted to work with him, because he has talent in midfield, but he's also a leader in the teams that he plays for. And I think it's really interesting sort of character to bring into the Victory dressing room, someone who trains really hard, works really hard. I think the Socceroos beat Indonesia, the young Socceroos beat Indonesia, I think it was, in a regional tournament in the semi-final in a full front of a full house in a big stadium. The Indonesian players were out on the ground, and Teague was the one going around consoling them, picking them up. It's a sort of mark of the individual. And all right, nice guys don't always come first, but there's something about him as a character that I think will be a real addition to the Victory dressing room.
And I've heard he's played really well in the last couple of games. You know, beautiful, elegant left footer, and you know, I think he potentially starts in round one for Melbourne Victory. And obviously with Josh Brolante, the outgoing captain, there's certainly a slot for him. Jake Brimmer's another one coming back into the team. Obviously didn't play a lot of football. All of a sudden, you've got competition for spots at Victory, which you didn't have last season. You had it the year before. So, look, they're interesting. They're clearly going to bounce back. It's just a question of how far.
And that is the question we'll end off with Melbourne Victory back in the top six. And you mentioned Arzani fitting a formation. Do you think he does start the season out on the flank?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. He starts. Yeah, he's been in good form. He's fit. I think we'll probably see some new elements to Arzani's game that the coaching staff's been working on. So, yeah, really excited to see him play.
Newcastle Jets, a fresh opportunity for Robbie Stanton, who, of course, was part of so much success at Sydney FC. He now has the reins of a club on his own at Newcastle Jets. Where do you see them at the moment, Tom, a side that I think we'll be relying on something that, that has been a hallmark of Robbie Standen, I guess, is youth and bring the best out of the kids.
Yeah, and that's the budget that he knew he was getting at Newcastle. That's the budget he's working to. Really interesting, though. I had a chat with Brandon O'Neill today at the A-League launch, and he is a player who, for someone who appears very calm on the surface, needs to be comfortable and happy in his life and in his football to play the best. And he talked about how happy he's feeling, how content he is. He's at peace with so many things in his life, really enjoying being a father, really enjoying being a husband, and really enjoying being a footballer again. And I think that's a good barometer of the environment of the Jets. It's going to be very hard to see them, to be honest, make a push for the finals at this stage because of the inexperience in the squad. But if his mood is a barometer of where they're at, they could well surprise us.
And it's been hard over the last decade for Jets fans. And I think as a starting point, they probably want to see a consistent and a concerted push for that top six. And that would even be possibly a progress on recent seasons. Do you think they can do that, Dave?
Oh, it would be huge progress. The big question mark's Robbie Standen. You know, he's been an assistant for a long time. We saw him up close in the A-League All-Stars game when Dwight York was the head coach and he was the assistant. He was very, very hands-on. The word is that he's been quite impressive thus far. They have lost some key players. I think Angus Sturgate is a huge loss for them, but similarly, it's a huge opportunity for someone like Reto Piscopo to really step up. And, you know, I think this is potentially a season for him to step up and be among that real top echelon of players and, you know, potentially challenge for the Johnny Warren medal, but also for, you know, for someone like Archie Goodwin to, you know, among the young cohort to step up and, you know, really get the local fans behind them, because, you know, when the Jets have been at their best, the crowds have been there and, you know, the locals, the Novocastrians have really got behind them. There's been a sprinkle of local talent, you know, as is the case for most, you know, successful A-League clubs. But another one that I'm really interested to see is Philip Cankar, or Chunchard, as he would be pronounced in the Balkans. He hasn't played a lot of football. I know he went over to Scotland, didn't play a lot, but there's something that I really like about him from the few games that I've seen him play. So I'm really intrigued to see what he does, and I think he's got massive upside, the big, tall stopper.
So a competitive side, Tom.
Yeah, Goodwin for me is key, and I hate to put pressure on someone who's basically still a teenager and has had such dreadful injury history, but he is the local kid. He's got star quality. He can score goals if he's given some service. I think it's going to be really important for players like him to be fit, and which is the great variable in his career so far. But I'd love to see him go well, because I think it'll really pull the crowd in behind them.
Whenever he did do well, it ignited interest around. You could tell on our social accounts, on our digital accounts, another local kid who people want to see do well. And if, you know, there is that balance in that side, there are goals. There are goals in that Newcastle Jets front line. So we wish them well this season as they make a bid to you know, bring some more for the fans at home at Newcastle over the course of the season. Perth Glory. Alan stated back after an extraordinary period at the Women's World Cup with the Philippines. He's back in the A-League men. Dave, we know what he did with the Central Coast. A rebuild job. He rebuilt Central Coast. He went and rebuilt the Philippines. Now he's got to come in and put his mark on Perth Glory. Will we see a similar impact out west?
Back to your earlier point, I think it's a really important fact to discuss and unpack. The fact that we've got a guy who has come from the women's game, who coached the Matildas, who's just coached the Philippines women's national team, and has come back into the men's game. This doesn't really happen in a lot of other sports. It doesn't happen in the AFL. It doesn't happen in the NRL. And it talks to one of the strengths of football and the A-Leagues, the fact that there is that real commonality and mutual respect. So the fact that Stadge comes back, and no one bats an eyelid. In fact, he's come in as a big signing. Like, he is revered over in Perth. And, you know, the mail from the West, and it takes a while to get to the East Coast. But the word is that, you know, he's really made an impact on the Perth Glory team. So I've got no doubt we'll see a bounce from Perth Glory again, like a lot of clubs. The question is how much, but yeah, they're one to watch out.
Let's not forget that when Stadge took over the Matildas, the players had just revolted against the previous coach, who'd been fired as a result. It was a few months out from an Asian Cup, and he took over and did extremely well. He's a stabiliser of ships. That's what he does. He likes to joke, why do I always join teams in crisis? But I think he's always drawn to you know, the firefighting you do straight away, and then how you build your way out of that crisis, and signing established players, he's not got star quality particularly, and he's also got the sort of sword of Damocles hanging over him that at some point in the next few weeks we're expecting Perth Glory to be sold. So there's the uncertainty there, but you can bet your bottom dollar any new owner looking at a coach with that track record is almost going to add to the price.
But there's enough quality there for them to make a real impact. You know, when you look at the spine, Ollie Sale, you know, Ollie Bozanic coming in, and then you've got someone like Adam Taggart who came in, you know, at the midway point of last season, but he's clearly good enough to be winning the A-League Golden Boot. I mean, you know, throw in a lot of those youngsters who've made an impact, and, you know, they did okay last season. They sort of fell off towards the end, but, you know, there's a bit of depth there, so Glory could do anything this season.
Their spine is super experienced. You even throw someone like Musti Amini into the fray as well. And spent a bit of time in Perth when Spurs and West Ham were here. And it was prior to Stagic, but Kenny Lowe was in charge. And there just seemed to be an enthusiasm about the crop of kids coming through. So it was a really good generation coming through. So if you can balance that stability they've got in there with a few of those kids, again, a bit like Newcastle, get that home crowd galvanised. And then all of a sudden, across the league, across all the time slots, you've got great atmospheres, great local support, and something to get invested in. So a bit like Newcastle, do they have enough, though? Have they done enough, or are they going to be pushing and knocking the door on the fringes?
Glory? Oh, I think they'll be right up there. I think they make the sixth this season. I think your point about ownership is really important. It sounds like that'll be sorted in the foreseeable future just to give them that stability. I think that's been something hovering, you know, over their heads for a while, and, you know, Stadge comes in, you know, adds another layer of, you know, of stability and excitement. He's not scared to play kids, good balance in terms of the age profile. So I think they've got all the ingredients back at their home stadium for the full season as well. You know, if they can get those crowds up to that, you know, 15,000-20,000 mark, and we know what the Glory fans can be like when they're up and about and singing, they could be dangerous. Not a place many teams will want to travel this season.
The fans could be dangerous. So
Australia Cup champion Sydney FC. So let's cut straight to the chase. Is that the start of their silverware for the season, or what do you expect from Steve Corica in what is currently the final year of his contract, Tom?
I think it was a really important win for them in many ways, not just the silverware, not just the fact that for a couple of years they haven't won anything, but I think the way that they responded in the second half to Steve Corica went in and gave them a baking at halftime. Joe Lolley, I said to him, what's the difference between the first half and the second half? And he said, and he pointed at Corica and said, him telling me that I was rubbish, basically, and really ripping into them. And I think it speaks a little bit to there's a confidence in Corica now in the role, having been there for longer than any other coach at Sydney FC. That's why he's gone completely grey. That he's not afraid to tell the players what he demands and set those standards. Obviously, he's brought in an old teammate, David Zrilic, as an assistant coach who's got terrific pedigree over in Europe. And I think that winning that game should give him some confidence to play. What we didn't see in the beginning of that cup final was Sydney's ability to make a game. Brisbane were playing out from the back and playing through them at times. And I think what I'd love to see from Sydney is not just that character to come back that they showed in the second half, but that they can take a game from the beginning by the scruff of the neck and actually make the play.
It's a different dynamic to Sydney, though, as well. Like Adam Lafondra going, while he was still scoring goals, was almost a statement of intent that they were going to look to maybe turn a leaf. Patrick Woods had a great run in the Australia Cup. There are a core of kids coming through, like Ryan Grant's. He's the old stayer of the team now. He was once the local boy that, you know, everyone pinned as the youths. There's a new crop coming through. I wonder, Dave, whether that's part of the time it might take to seek that, what Tom wants to see, a bit more front foot football. Do they have the balance right in the squad this year to do that?
I think they do. I think it's the reset that needed to happen. I think maybe there were a few players that, you know, didn't necessarily go on too long in terms of their own careers, but maybe, you know, they needed to make some of those changes sooner and you know, promote some of the academy products sooner. Certainly when you look at, you know, the success that some of those Sydney FC products have had at other clubs, and Neuenhoff is the case in point. I mean, he shouldn't have been at Western Sydney last season. He should have been dominating the midfield for Sydney FC. So I think Corica appears to have learnt from that. We're going to see more younger players, Kucharski, Holman, for instance, get opportunities this year. So I think getting that, again, that balance and that age profile a bit more balanced is something that was required, and I think they'll benefit from that. Can they challenge? Of course they can, but it's going to be a really interesting season for Steve Corica. He was under pressure, wasn't he, last season? So let's see how he goes.
And amongst the discussion, of course, we've just had, this Fabio Gomez. So, you know, talking about how are they going to replace Lafondra, they have done that with possibly the added bonus that Patrick Wood comes into the season very confident.
Yeah, and he's struggled to score goals so far. The club really rate him. All the coaches who've ever worked with him have really rated him. He's struggled to translate that into regular goal scoring and a sense that he can actually lead the line rather than just come on and pick up scraps towards the end. But those goals he scored laid down the gauntlet to Cora. Play me. I have to play in round one. We will yet to see how Fabio Gomez goes in the sense of if he scored a penalty and a tap-in. Now, obviously, he had to be in the right place for the tap-in, but great for his confidence, but doesn't really give us a marker yet. But really interesting, and I think we might talk about some of the individual players at the end of this podcast, but the Joe Lolley took the game on in the second half. He was poor in the first half, said so himself, and looked like he was really up for it in the second half. I think he's going to be really important.
I think you're talking about supply. I think those players will be in a position for tap-ins. They will get them because Joe Lolley looks to be fitter in red-hot form. Really interesting insight he gave in the post-game show that after the Australia Cup final, that he took some adjusting to get used to not playing every odd day like he did in England, and that maybe his fitness suffered as a result, but he's ready to go this season, and he does look in brilliant fettle. Wellington Phoenix, Ufuk Talai, every season we came in when he was in charge and said, guaranteed he will get them up and they will be super hard to beat this season. So how big is the transition going to be into the post-Talai era?
Well, Giancarlo Italiano, or Chiefy, as everybody in football seems to know him, comes with a good rap. Everybody rates him. All of his work, though, has been a youth footballer as an assistant, worked youth football in New South Wales. He worked at Sydney FC's youth system. Talai then took him to Wellington as his assistant, clearly rated him highly. And I like that the Wellington are prepared to take a punt in the sense of promoting from within. You know, that they should be the kind of club that develops coaches as well as players, brings them on. But he's got a very young squad in many ways. He still has Oscar Zawada. He's still got Bojidar Krajev. He's still got David Ball. You're laughing at my pronunciation.
It's just like every time Zawada's name's mentioned, I just keep thinking of Ted Lasso and Zahavi.
Oh, that's good. I thought you were laughing at my pronunciations. Make a change.
Not laughing at your jokes.
No. Well, they certainly have the players. That some of those key players are still there. Krajev showed us in flashes what he could do, but didn't set the league alight. Maybe this is the year when it happened, but it will kind of have to happen for them, I think, if they're really going to make a decent fist of things.
I get the sense that they're going to have to rely on a bit of continuity, and even continuity from, I mean, obviously a new coach comes in and will put their own stamp on things, but even a continuity on the stability that having someone from within the camp will bring them as well.
Definitely. I think it's going to be a huge challenge for them this season. I mean, Mohamed Altai spoke to the other day, and he's, I think, a really good, solid signing for them from Western Sydney. But when you lose the likes of, you know, Sale and Lewis, there's some real, you know, key experienced players that, you know, are taken out of that squad. Obviously, Ben Wayne left, early last season. I think the biggest loss for them is Talai, though. Ufuk Talai, there are so many players and people in football who I've spoken to who rate him so highly, and it's nothing against Italiano. I just rate Ufuk Talai as a coach so highly. The interesting one, as a, you know, to go off on a tangent, as we tend to do on these podcasts, Ufuk Talai still without a club,
working with the Socceroos.
Okay,
to put it on a sort of interim basis.
I think he wants to coach full time. Now, I don't know where that opportunity will present itself, whether it's overseas or potentially in the A-League, but I think there'd be a few clubs looking at Ufuk Talai thinking, I'd love to get him in.
There is an elite manager waiting in the wings the moment one club's manager is in the hot seat this season. If he hasn't been picked up overseas, or if he wants to get back in the meat and drink of day-to-day football. It's a fascinating season for Wellington, though, too, because they've had this patch of themselves for the last, you know, however many years. And by the time the next season rolls around, they'll be preparing with some competition in the market too, Dave, as well, with the announcement of Auckland coming into the A-League men ranks in the future.
Yeah, it's huge for Wellington, huge for New Zealand, huge for Auckland, even bigger for Auckland, and obviously massive for the A-League. So for the first time, we'll have a New Zealand derby across the ditch. As we say over here in Australia, but it's really intriguing for Wellington because obviously Auckland will be, you know, looking to sign players from January. They'll clearly be looking at the local market as well as all Australian and Kiwi players across the globe. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. There's obviously that huge rivalry between Auckland and Wellington. We've got a really credible ownership group that's coming in at Auckland. So, I think that local derby over there in New Zealand could really add another special dimension to the A-League.
Competition always adds, puts people back in the hot seat, makes them lift their games.
Oh, can only, let's be honest.
Now, the marathon is nearly over. Two more W's to go in this, gents. We are almost through. Western Sydney Wanderers. I am equally intrigued with Marco Rudan's side this season because they would have been thinking last year they fell probably a week short at least of where they were expecting to go. Also, lots to talk about from a recruitment point of view, but you would expect them to be there or thereabouts this season again.
Well, interesting chatting to Marcus Antonsson, their new signing. He was talking about when he played at Malmo and they did great things in the Champions League, had a really good run, and he's comparing that team with the Western Sydney squad. He's only been there a few weeks, but he really felt there's a togetherness, a brotherhood, or whatever the phrase you want to use, like he had at Malmo, and they overachieved there massively. And he feels, not that Western Sydney doing well is overachieving, but he feels the same camaraderie with the team, that they're united. He's impressed with the youth team, where the way that the sort of level it reaches in the NPL, how it's toughening the players up, the young players coming through. So that's a pretty good sign, I think, because he's not full of bluster. He talks quite a considered way, and I think gave me quite a good appraisal of where they're at.
But that also includes a fair bit of turnover as well, which we should be not surprised that you know, Western Sydney in recent seasons, but it still means that Rudan's got a bit of betting in to do straight away.
Yeah, they've lost some important players, but when you look at the likes of Lawrence Thomas, Marcelo Borrello still being there, you know they're going to be competitive. You know they're going to be competing for the top six. Obviously, the question then is some of the young players, and they do have a fantastic academy at the Wanderers, what sort of impact they make. And then a couple of their new signings both have points to prove for different reasons. Josh Belanto, you mentioned him earlier, didn't end the way that he wanted it to at Melbourne Victory. And, you know, in many ways surprising that he did leave after wearing the captain's armband for a couple of seasons. So I think we'll see a really determined and rejuvenated Josh Belanto, who at his best is absolutely in Socceroos contention and was so close to making a number of those squads back in 14 and 2018. And the other one's Lachlan Brook. Scored a bag of goals in the Australia Cup, a fantastic, tricky attacking player, almost sort of broke through over in Europe, but didn't have that stint back at Adelaide United. He's ready to go, and I think if he can tear it up, then they've got the ingredients of a team that could potentially challenge for title honours.
I tell you what, if you want to hear an interview of someone talking glowingly about the Isuzu UDA League, it is Lachie Brook. Gave one of the all-time great endorsements when he was in Ollie Roos' camp before he had signed with Western Sydney, talking about how much he loves the league and how much the league has played a role in his contribution and is underrated. So I reckon not only does he want to come back and prove a point, he'll probably come back hungry to win some silverware here in Western Sydney based on those comments. Can he do that as part of Western Sydney, Tom?
Absolutely. I think they can. I was really disappointed with the way that they sort of subsided in the finals last year because I thought they played some great football. Now, they have lost some of the architects, a lot of the architects of that great football, but they've also brought in players with pedigree. Borrello just seems to go to a new level. I mean, he was playing as a number 10 at times last year, number 9 out wide, and doing it all with equal aplomb. I think Antonsson is a natural goal scorer, so I think there are the ingredients there. As always, it's a question of the Marco Rudan souffle and whether it rises or sinks.
And it will
steady, stabilise.
A souffle rises or sinks. I'd never cook for me.
I think it'll be the exact same temperature as it was last year. It's a matter of whether or not they can take the next step in the finals when the pressure is on. One team that has done that over the last two seasons ago was Western United. That's where we can conclude our previews this season. Again, some work done in the shop window, Dave. You've spent some time at Western United in the off-season doing some content capture there. What's been your view of the vibe in John Aloisi's camp?
Yeah, really happy camp. They had a challenging season last season. Some big names departing, players who've made a huge impact with Western United in previous seasons. But I think Diamanti and Prijevic being the two main ones, Lacroix as well. But I think some of their signings have been really, really shrewd. Angus Thurgate, we referenced him earlier with regards to Newcastle and Jets. I think he's a huge signing for them. I think he's got massive upside. I do feel that he's got the potential to play for the Socceroos. So I think this could be the season that he really takes a step up. Daniel Peña's another one. We saw him absolutely take the A-League by storm a couple of seasons ago with the Newcastle Jets. Had a really challenging period in South Korea for a couple of reasons. He had a serious injury and his wife also became very seriously ill, and he felt that they were mutually inclusive and spoke to him at length, and he spoke about Australia being his happy place. So he's determined to really, you know, make a comeback and make Australia home. And I think Daniel Peña, even at 80 or 90% of what he was at the Newcastle Jets, has the potential to most certainly lift Western United back into finals contention and potentially even higher.
Solid core can unlock, Tom, quite a talented and interesting attacking unit.
Yeah, and I think the departure of Prijevic in many ways is a bonus, because it frees up opportunity for Noah Botic. He's a terrific striker. He's got that raw quality of leading a line of strong, powerful player who knows how to score. And that is such a rare quality. It's why strikers remain the most prized commodity in football. And I think that he's got the chance now to step out from that shadow. He's learned from a terrific European striker for over a couple of years, but now it's the time for him to step up. And I think in a broader sense, their recruitment's been targeted and clever. I mean, to persuade Thurgate to leave Newcastle, it's with a very specific role in mind. Even bringing Peña back, not just the way that doing so, because he was clearly a good player, but the way they've done it. And as you said, the embrace of him and the fact that he feels comfortable and held, it speaks to the sort of culture off the field and what they're building.
And Nikita Rukavica, and also even someone like Thomas Howard-Bell, who at one point 2 seasons ago had Andrew Redmayne on the bench at Sydney FC. So it's some really targeted recruitment there.
Yeah, Nikita's an interesting one. You referenced Botic. I think there will be times where only one of them plays, but I think there'll be a lot of times where both of them play up front, almost as a front two. John Aloisi played a lot of his football in a front two pairing, and I know he certainly believes that someone of the stature and experience of Nikita Rukavica can make Noah Botic a better player and get him to score more goals. Another one to look out for, Seb Pasquale. We're hearing he's had a really, really good preseason. Again, almost in that Daniel Arzani mold, where he's not young. I think he's about 24, but he's had so many challenges with injury and not playing a lot of football. Full preseason. Look forward to seeing what he can do playing regularly, because he's another one who, at his best, is absolutely a Socceroos contender.
There are a number of teams in this discussion we've just had that we've said will be in the finals. There are a number that we think will improve on last season. There are a number like Western United who will be knocking on the door again. Do you think they will make it into the six? And I guess to conclude that, is there anyone from the six last season that you think is at the greatest risk of dropping out, given that we've said that the likes of Perth, possibly Western United, depending what you might say, Brisbane, might be pushing for those positions?
Well, I think there's a levelling up, levelling down, how you want to look at it in terms of the pack. I think, as I said, Melbourne City are back in the pack. Sydney SC have shown the character there to be there. Western Sydney, through the force of some of those players, you assume they're going to be there. It's around the edges. It's much harder to pick around whether Perth. I think Perth probably will be very close, not there, because of the players, the experienced players you discussed earlier. It's far harder to go. In previous years, we've gone, right, those three or four, they're gone. It's harder to make an argument for Newcastle and Adelaide to storm into the finals, and I really hope they surprise us. But beyond that, you start to, and Wellington, it's not impossible for any of them. I think there's much more of a harmonisation of prospects.
Can you beat the harmonisation of prospects?
No, I can't. But what I will say is that this is probably the most intrigue going into an A-League men's season that I can remember, with more question marks than ever before. I think it's the most open league that we've ever, the most open that we've ever got into a season. To Tom's point, I don't think there is a standout title favourite. I also don't think we know exactly who the star or the stars of the competition will be. I do believe there will be three or four young breakout stars and potentially some visa breakout stars for this season. So I'm really excited to see how all of this unfolds. But to your earlier question about Western United, I think they'll come back into the mix, into the top six. Title, maybe a step too far, but we do believe in the second half of the season they will be playing at their home ground out in the West. And for a club that's been sort of moving and chopping and changing and played at, I think, six or seven different home venues, I think that could be really important for them.
We've covered a lot of ground over the last just under an hour or so. We've got one spicy topic to finish with, and I hope if there's some background noise and you listen to this podcast, I hope we're able to get through the next couple of minutes and we're not exit stage left or right out of here. But I think what you said there, Dave, about there's no standout marquee with Goodwin going, and Matt Leckie's been a bit injured, so he's not going to be, you know, the pin up to start, for the first round. And I love that. I love that we're going to be discovering some stars. We're going to be discovering some Socceroos. We've seen through the Women's World Cup the contribution of the Liberty A-League. And once again, the health check of the Socceroos and the health check in the barometer of Australian football will be how many stars we can discover from that Isuzu A-League this season. They saw Aaron Kunda gave us so much last year, Garen Kuol the season before. And I can't wait as we review and have a look at the success stories over the next couple of weeks and months, who gets those opportunities. Already we saw it in the Australia Cup. We had a 15-year-old in the Australia Cup, for goodness sake. So hopefully that's something we'll be talking about going forward. But the stars that will dominate the season, I want to discuss this with you guys, because watching the Australia Cup final, that's our most recent reference point, I watched that and went, under Russell Luisi, I think Jay O'Shea is going to blow this competition out of the water this season. And watching Joe Lolley fit, I think he could go a long, long, long way to being a Johnny Warren Miller winner this season. And it got me thinking, as I do, but now I'd rather do it with you guys. If you had to pick your top five, if we had to come up with a podcast top five players in the league this season, who they'll be, I'm putting those two in the top five. Do I have any agreement? And who else are you guys throwing in?
You know full well, because we discussed this earlier, you've jumped in first and look at the talent spotter. Jay O'Shea is, as I said before, not just playing well, but playing, you know, happily and loving the system. And I think it really appeals to him. He's not playing counter-attack football like they did last year. He's not trying to hit a lone striker with long balls. They're playing passing football. And he was everywhere. And the system allows for that. At one point, when certain players move around and they do the rotations, he's dropping into left-back. He's receiving the ball. You see the goalkeeper freak is appearing in the middle of the two centre backs, almost as a back three, and they're playing, rotating the ball that way. So I think absolutely Jay O'Shea is going to be pivotal to them. And Joe Lolley, after half time, looked like a man reborn. I really like him as an individual. He's a good old fashioned English player, and he just speaks from the heart. Speaks honestly. He's a great interviewee, but more importantly, when he's flying, he's a great winger. The one caveat is that Sydney need to get him on the ball when he's moving, which is what happened in the second half. Mm-hmm. The game became more transactional. When it's like John Barnes many years ago for England. If you give him the ball when he's standing still in his own half, he can't produce magic. You give him the ball when he's running, just watch what happens.
Are you going to disagree with any of those, Dave? And let's round out the five. But yeah, you got two out of three of us throwing them in.
I think they were two big calls. I'd say O'Shea definitely top 10, maybe top five. Depends how Brisbane goes.
Speaks very highly of you, to be fair.
We'll do a top 10 next week. We'll round it out. We're pretty knackered after this so far. We'll keep it to five.
We are. Joe Lolley, top 10, top 15 definitely, maybe top 10.
Well, we better hustle another couple of players in. Who are you throwing in, mister?
Arslan at Melbourne City. I think he will tear this league apart. From what we've seen in pre-season Australia Cup, look, I think there's clearly a geographic bias here. You're, based in Sydney, I'm based in Melbourne.
But probably the recency bias, probably the last game I saw. So I'm
going to change players in which state?
Well, Brisbane, closer to the Sydney-New South Wales border. But Tolgoi Arslan has been outstanding in pre-season. I mean, you know, Serie A football, international pedigree. I think, and there's a real opening there with, you know, the likes of Tilio Berengay, Valon Berisha, and also Naboot being injured, but the aforementioned players departing. So I think there will be a heavy reliance on him to step up. Matthew Leckie, fit and firing, is clearly in that discussion also. I mean, he at his best is unstoppable physically and you know, even technically now. So yeah, they're one and a half, two I'll throw into the mix.
I've mentioned Antonsen before. There are certain strikers who you see come to the league and I think they're going to score goals. So Matt Derbyshire, as soon as he signed for MacArthur, I just was convinced he'd score a bucket of goals.
He's no longer in the league.
Same with Alfie Lafondra, who's also no longer in the league. I wish he were no longer in the league. And it's about their movement in the box and their ability to find space and finish. And I'm watching Antonsen's movement, both in Europe and for the Wanderers. I think if he's got any kind of service, he will score goals. We've talked with Ten Pundit Roy Donovan about, you know, the tap-in art is about the ability to lose yourself in the penalty area and then reappear at the crucial moment. And I think Antonsen's got that. So if that's one of the reasons why I think Western Sydney will be challenging.
Save ourselves losing ourselves in this podcast. I'll throw a couple more names at you, but I'd love to hear who else you've got. And I don't think we're going to come up with a definitive five, given that Dave's has smacked ours down into the top 50. But we'll keep having a crack at it. Marco Tullio, shouldering the burden with the others having departed Central Coast. Dave's got him in the top 100.
Dave's got a wasp in his mouth by the look of it.
And I'm throwing in for the ride that we all hope we go on in Nestoria and Kunda. Who else have we, clearly attacking players, so absolute, you know, fantasy football picks here. But who else are you guys throwing into the mix?
I was going to say Luka Jovanović, if he gets, he will get a chance at Adelaide, and the fact they put him on that professional contract shows, number one, how highly they rate him, number two, how much they expect foreign clubs to be looking at him. But he, the pace, the and just the mentality, you know, he doesn't look flustered for someone so young.
That's a great answer.
Deliberately left it hanging for you there, Dave.
Eric Kunda's an interesting one. The top 5 or 10 youngsters, for me, he's at the top. His potential is astronomical, but he has the potential to get into that top 10, even top 5 in the A-League. That right foot, that the velocity in his shots is out of control. If he can play, you know, 70, 80, 90 minutes, then consistently and you know, produce goals, assists, etc., he could be right up there. In saying that, the way the game's changed with the additional subs, etc., there's certainly a role for the impact players almost strategically. So even if it's a combination of starting and coming off the bench, I think the story's definitely there. But a couple of others that I think are worth mentioning: Zinedine Mikash at Melbourne Victory. Again, I think if they turn this season, Victory, as I expect them to do, I think Daniel Arzani will be right up there, but Zinedine will play a huge role. He's got some personality, he's got a bit of swagger about him. I think he's had a little bit of an interrupted preseason, so we might see him kick off a little bit later, but I think he could be one that absolutely sets this league alight. And Daniel Arzani, I know I mentioned him, I know we spoke about him at length, but him at his best is absolutely in the top 5 players in this competition.
Mate, you've spoken at such length, I'm worried we're going to walk out and find that most of the season's already gone.
The full-time whistle has gone. There was absolutely no unanimous verdict then. And what was I thinking? We would come to a unanimous verdict. But on the hour, we're going to call that there, gents, because there is so much things to get stuck into over the coming weeks. And I need to move around. I've been frozen in this position for the last hour that I think we absolutely have to call it. Absolute pleasure. Great talking A-League's football with you, gentlemen, once again. There is so much to look forward to. If anything, our inability to pick a top 6, rattling off of some really exciting names.
We have come to no conclusions.
No conclusions. Hang on, before we finish, we do need to have the worst question in the preseason, which is, who do you think is going to win the championship? But the names we just rattled off show, even in an individual level, what we get to tuck into over the next few weeks and months, to prove once again that the A-League is as entertaining to watch as anything. Visit aleagues.com.au for more unanimous, precise lockdown season predictions. But Dave, Tom, your champions for the season, but from the long run week before the season, who are you going with?
We'll let Tom go first.
Dave, that's the first.
Dave, you got the mic.
I honestly cannot pick a winner right now. If I had to, I'd say Melbourne City, but I'm not even convinced with Melbourne City. For me, there is not a standout right now. I'm finding it really hard to make a call.
Harmonisation of prospects.
We're going to end with absolutely nothing. So there you go. That it all goes well for the rest of the season. From the podcast, by the way, gents, nominated for the best sports podcast of the year at the Australian Podcast Awards. Heaven knows how, given you've come all the way, if you've heard this at the end, and we've given you absolutely nothing to hang on to for the season. Gents, it's been a lot of fun. Hope you enjoyed that, guys, listening in or watching on, and have what you need to know to get ready for the season. But if you don't, aleagues.com.au, keepup.com.au, you'll have all the verdicts and information you need ahead of kickoff on Friday. We absolutely cannot wait. Until the next episode of the podcast, as always, enjoy your football.